Alright. So, since it's just one-on-one right now, what are you struggling with most? Just...
Yeah, pretty much just
okay. Okay. Reviewing this then, just so we got it on there for everybody else. Genitive case, you understand? Mm-hmm. Case of ofness, fromness, generally translated of so-and-so. Dative case is the case of two-ness, withness, in-ness, generally translated to or in so-and-so. And it's the case of indirect object, so your preposition case is usually dative. We're going to talk about prepositions today, so that'll help. And this is the full paradigm. The bonus that you didn't do was that the hora is your what's the word? Paradigm noun. That's not the right, but that's feminine first declension nouns that end in alpha instead of eta. They follow that pattern in the singular, and then they switch over to that pattern in the plural. So you just have to remember that exactly. Essentially just learning how to recognize them, because you'll come across them while you're reading. And we talked about translation hints, and most of today is going over the translations in the workbook. So we'll work through those together. How far did you get through those? Just like the first couple ones after the parsing?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. That's all right. Translation hints are look for the nominative, look for the article, find the iota subscripts. Those tell you the pieces. And then look past the noun to see if there's a genitive noun following it. You know, translate that as a chunk. And then break the sentence into manageable chunks. We'll just get to the homework and go over it together. Alright. Let's look at this homework. Exercise 7. You had the parsing. How'd you do on the parsing?
I think I did pretty good. I forgot what logo was doing, but that's word.
Yeah. Yeah, and your obviously your vocab will be important when you're doing the parsing. Give me the first couple. Agape with the iota subscript. What is that?
Nominative case, singular, feminine, and lexical form is agapos, which is love. Right.
Close. It's actually the dative case. The way that the clue on that is the iota subscript. That's the only change in spelling. The lexical form is agape. It's the exact same thing, only without the iota subscript. I don't have that chart with me, but... So if you have the notes from last week that have the full noun paradigms at the bottom, have that out so you can see while you're parsing that.
This one?
Yeah, that one. What about kurios? Or kurios, excuse me.
Accusative, plural, masculine, and I also put / neuter, but I think it's masculine, like, by default.
Yeah, it's masculine because the word is masculine. It's, okay. So yeah, the ending looks like it could be it just can't even be neuter, because ois is just a masculine ending.
Yeah.
Neuter would be ah, just an alpha. So.
And then the lexical form is a kuros, like ois for the ending.
Close, flip them, kurios.
Okay.
Iota, omicron, okay. Sigma, yeah. Instead of omicron, iota, sigma.
That's what I've written down, so.
Okay, yeah.
Kurios.
Lord, yeah. Yeah, and you'll recognize that you'll have lots of osses and as, because those are the common masculine and feminine nominative endings. But let's go to... number 3 is a good one, too. Hamartion. What'd you get for that?
Genitive, plural, and... they all have the same ending, so.
So, yeah, you got to know your vocab.
Yeah.
You got to know when you see homarti, ah, you got to know that vocab word. It ends in an alpha. So you know that it ends in alpha, that means it's feminine.
Yeah, and then it means sin.
Yep. Tus is an easy one. You got that one?
Yep. It's an accusative, plural, masculine, and then the lexical form I put O because we learned all of the, well, omicron, and then because we learned all of the ways of saying the as.
Yeah.
That, so.
Exactly. Nice. What about anthropo?
Dative, singular, masculine, and the ending is just the. Okay, I think it's exactly the same. I'm not sure what it is lexical form, but it means man.
Yeah. Good. Anthropos is the lexical form.
I think I accidentally just rewrote it. So
you put anthropo again. You had huios on the quiz. Jump down to number 9. And I actually have a typo on here. Let me fix that. But go ahead and start parsing number 9.
Dative, plural, masculine, autos, and then it means he or it.
Okay. Dang, guy. I didn't have a typo. I'm just crazy.
So what does it mean by 2x in the parentheses?
It means that there's two options, right? So it could be the dative plural masculine, or it could be the dative plural neuter.
Okay.
Because the masculine and the neuter, or the masculine and neuter dative singulars, or plurals, have the same ending. Remember, twice, twice, twice.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be neuter, it could be masculine, it depends on the context. If it's referring to a masculine object, we're going to talk about autos, I think next week is when we talk about autos, and it's a pronoun, right? So it's referring back to some other noun, this man, this thing, this woman, what is it? That'll tell you if it's masculine or neuter, but since we don't have a context, we don't know. So it could be masculine or neuter. Last one. Same thing with number 10.
I put accusative, plural, feminine, and then the ending is IOS, iota, omicron, and sigma. And then it means kingdom.
All right, you got everything except for the lexical form. It's basileia, ends with a iota alpha instead of a omicron sigma. And that's just, again, that's just vocab. That's, you already know what you're... There's another option for parsing that, though. The other option is... genitive singular. Why is that? Why is there another option for the genitive singular?
I don't know.
You got your chart there? All right, look at the hora noun paradigm, right? Look at the genitive singular. What's the ending on it? Alpha sigma. So you get those alpha pattern feminine nouns like basileia ends in an alpha in its lexical form. Its genitive singular and its accusative plural look the same. So again, how do you know which one it is? First off, context. Second big clue will be the article, because the article doesn't look the same. The article will tell you if it's a genitive singular, if it's an accusative plural. Not bad. Parsing is pretty difficult, particularly when you first get started doing it. So
it definitely helps that it's kind of the same way in French.
Yeah. Most Latin and or European languages have some sort of a parsing system that you have to do. English just doesn't. So English speakers, when they start doing parsing, you're like, what? One word with all of these different meanings? All right, how far did you get on the translations? You got through warm-up. Which letter did you...
I did the first one, and then I kind of gave up.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. Well, we'll just work through them together, though. You got the first one. What'd you get?
Lord of Angels.
Close. So, there's a... Took me a while to get this straight, also. Which word is in the genitive case in that? In Angelos Kuriou. Which one is the genitive?
Kuriou.
Kuriou. So, what does Kuriou mean?
Lord.
Yeah. Well, Kuriyas means Lord. Kuriou means of Lord, or of the Lord. So, start by translating your genitive, of the Lord, and then you throw your nominative out there, angel, and that'll keep it straight. When you first start translating genitives, always translate it as of the something, or of something. That'll help you keep it straight. When you see a whole big list of them together, you can get lost. Just, okay, is this saying which one is possessing which one? All right, letter beta. Phonane angelone. Or angelone, I should say. You know one of those words, right? What's angelone?
That's angel.
Yeah, there you go. Parse it for me.
So, that's, of the angels, because it's genitive plural.
Good, yeah, so of the angels. Okay, and do you know what phonane is?
No.
Alright, it's given from the root, the lexical form would be phoné. So, it'd be, phi, omega, nu, eta. So, start with that. Can you tell me what case it's in?
Let's see.
I don't know the word.
Genitive. No, such as singular. It's is it accusative singular?
Yes. Accusative singular. Alright, so you know that the genitive goes with that one. So, of the angels, and phoné, the word phoné means sound, or noise, or voice. So, how would you translate it?
Voice of the angels.
Voice of the angels, that's a good translation. Some angels' voices would also be a legitimate translation, or some angels' voice. I think voice of the angel would be better. Voice is singular, so.
Yeah.
Good. And again, context will tell you if sound or voice is a better one to use there, but we don't have context. So. All right, we got a bunch of words in this one. You read that for me. Hey. Rough breathing, am I right? So, hey.
Agape. To, what's the X? I don't think the X is.
It's not, yeah, you're right, it's not Xi, it's He.
Heroes, S-O-I-S, Heroes 2.
Free, stew. So also, lots of people just pronounce this Cree.
Oh, okay.
Cree stew.
Cree stew.
So, he agape tu Cree stew. To look at, tell me what the articles are. What articles do you see there?
So, for agape, we have feminine singular for accusative.
Try one more time.
Nominative, sorry.
Nominative, yeah, okay.
And then two is genitive singular. It's either masculine or neuter.
Right, good. Okay, so you know you got your nominative here. So that's the subject of the sentence. Hey, agape. You remember what the word agape means?
Love.
Love. So the love is the nominative. That's the subject. This is in the genitive, so you can throw the word of there.
Of, and then
whatever this you don't know what it means. Christu, tell you the
Christ?
The nominative case, yes, it's Christ. Nominative case is Christos. And
the love of Christ.
The love of Christ, yeah. Or, equally, Christ's love. And that's all the subject of the sentence. That's that little phrase, tu Christu, is one that you see so often. They just throw it on the end of lots of different phrases. So if you get to where you're reading your Greek Bible, tu Christu, don't even have to think about it. You just know. Of Christ. Good. Not bad. Let's just keep trekking through, and then we'll skip into one of the tougher ones a little bit. Delta. Sound it out for me. I'm going to practice reading.
Tice. Tice, yeah. Yeah.
That's a moo.
Oh, right.
It's all right.
Yeah.
Get confused. So that's a m. So am.
T-I-S.
So one more time. Ha. Mar. Ti. Ice. There you go. So, tais hamartiais.
To, kai ru.
To kai ru, yeah. Tais hamartiais to kai ru. All right. Again, you got article noun. So, your articles will clue you into to what's going on. Parse your articles for me.
So, tais, that would be dative. Dative feminine.
Dative feminine, alright. So you know you're going to have in or to or with or something for that word. Mm-hmm. And then what's that one?
That one's genitive singular.
There you go. And what's the number of that dative feminine?
Plural.
Alright, so in the somethings, genitive, so of the something. Alright, so what are the somethings?
That one might be one.
Yeah, I think you know that one. You had
sin.
It. Yeah, there you go.
The sin of man.
So, in the sins.
In the sins of man.
Of. Try that one again.
Man.
What's Kairu?
Lord.
That's Kuri. Kurios would be Lord. This is Kairos.
Alright.
Kairos is time, or day, or era. Has a lot of. It refers to a period in time.
The sins of that era.
So, yeah. The sins of the era, the time. I put in the sins of the time. So, you gotta have in, or with, or to. Something to let you know, okay, this is a dative. In the sins of, because it's a genitive. The time. Alright, let's jump over to one that's more of a complete sentence. That's interesting. Let's go to number four is good. That's a question. You practice translating questions.
So, it gives me the first word, or it says in parentheses, so is that...
So yeah, so when he gives you this, he gives you some big long word, and then he gives you parentheses right after it, he's translating whatever came right before it.
Okay.
Because that's a verb, and we haven't learned any verbs yet. So, what you'll see for these first few is he'll give you the verb, he'll translate the verb for you, let you know what you should put in there. And then he leaves the rest for you to translate, so... He tells you that means we should continue. And then he gives you this. So. Translate that part for me.
So that's te.
Te?
Which is the.
Right? Yeah, the.
And then.
Hamartia.
Hamartia.
Once you know that one.
Which is sin.
Sin, yeah. Hamartiology is the study of sin. That's how I remembered it, because I was in theology classes at the time. But what do you notice about the endings, though?
They have the iota subscript.
They got the iota subscript, so that tells you what? What case are they?
Dative,
yeah. What else do you notice about the last letter? They're not the same, right?
Yeah.
One's an eta, and one's an alpha. So, hamartia is one of those alpha pattern first declension nouns, right? So, its ending in the singular is going to end with an alpha. But the article stays the same, regardless of whether or not it's an alpha pattern or an eta pattern,
okay.
First declension noun. So even though it looks like they don't go together, because they got different letters ending, they do go together, because one's an alpha pattern, but the article stays unchanged.
Okay. You'll be able to tell that because of the iota subscript?
Yes, well, and just because you know because the articles... They're never going to change if they're because they match in case number and gender. Because this is a dative singular feminine article, and this is a dative singular feminine noun. So they match in case number and gender. That means they go together.
Okay.
So translate that for me. It's a dative, so in.
We should continue in sin.
There you go. So, and then what's this punctuation point mean?
Is that a question mark?
That's a question mark in Greek. So,
asking if we should continue in sin.
Yeah, it's should we continue in sin? So yeah, translate it really literally in English, you go, we should continue in sin. But to get the meaning across better, you reverse the word order and say, should we continue in sin? Because we know he's asking a question. Good. All right. Number five is a real mind bender. It's a nice long one. So, first off, looking at number five. This is where we those tips for translation, your procedures, is going to be helpful. Start off, find the subject. Where is the nominative noun? Look for a nominative noun. Is there one there? Yeah, son, hachuias. That's a nominative. So what I do is I just underline the nominative first. So hachuias, that's our nominative, that's our subject. Next, we're going to look right after it and say, is there a genitive following it that modifies it?
Man?
Yeah. The son, we see hachuias, and then right away we see two. Oh, wait, that's a genitive. Okay, so hachuias of man. So the son of man, that's our subject. Nice. So there's our first manageable chunk. We'll put brackets around it, rewrite it down here in English word order, haquias tu theu, or tu anthropou. What do you got next? There's another article, and tus angelus. What's the case of that?
The accusative plural.
Accusative plural. So, what's the accusative case? It's the object. And what's angelus?
Angels.
Angels. Or... it's okay. Messengers. Angel or messenger. Always got to use the context to determine which one. Are we talking about an earthly messenger or a heavenly messenger? And what's that last one hanging out there? Yeah, okay, and parse it for me.
Oh, that's genitive singular.
Genitive singular. So, he, she, it, let's just go with he. And it's in the genitive, so how would you translate that into a genitive? Of or from he, or put it in more English, of or from him, so of him. So this last section is the angel of him. Again, we hear that in English, we go, let's modify that. What's another way that the genitive gets used?
The angel from him?
Could be the angel from him. Don't want to use that because there's no preposition. We'll get to that today. The way that makes more sense to the English speech is his angel. It'd be possessive, right? The angel of him is another way of saying his angel, right? So this is a genitive showing possession, kind of. And so the Son of Man, his angel, and then we got the verb he translated for us, he will send. So the Son of Man is the he in that. The Son of Man will send his angel, or the angel of him. Do you kind of follow how we worked through that? Mm-hmm. Split it up into chunks. So the Son of Man will send his angels, or his messengers. It's a plural, so yeah, excuse me. Son of Man will send his angels, or his messengers.
Okay.
Let's do one more, and then we'll jump into prepositions. Let's do number 6. Alright, so it gives you the verb first, and he translates it for you, so don't even worry about that. Start out, look for a nominative. Is there a nominative that gives us the subject of this sentence?
I'm thinking, the last word. This kingdom is not.
So yeah, we know that's the genitive. What else? You said kingdom, basileia. Is that in the nominative?
Basileia. But that's feminine.
That's feminine.
So it ends in yeah, it's nominative, singular, feminine.
There you go. So yeah, your article clues you in. Basileia is nominative singular feminine. So ha, hey basileia. Again, we get the article doesn't match the ending because this is an alpha pattern instead of an eta pattern. First declension noun. But yeah, this is hey basileia is your nominative singular feminine subject of the sentence. You already parsed this one for me. What was it?
Genitive,
Yeah, genitive plural. Ton huranon. So the kingdom of... Translate that for me. Uranas. What does it sound like in English?
Not a word I use very often.
Think of the planets. Yeah. It's heavens. The kingdom of Uranas is heaven. So, and it's plural. So it's actually the kingdom of the heavens. But if you look in your footnote, number 6, you got footnote 2 at the end of it. This word sometimes occurs in the plural, but it is preferable to translate it as a singular in English. So you want to get really literal with your translation, you'd put the kingdom of heavens, or of the heavens. More regular or English reading would be the kingdom of heaven. What's gar mean? That's a word you're going to see a lot. It means for, or therefore. For, gar. Gar is one of those words that always appears as the second word in the sentence, even though it shows up first. And I forget the word. There's a word for it. Just these words that follow this pattern, where they're used as a second word in the sentence, but they're a transition word. For some reason, you just get used to where you see that second, and you mentally put it first as an English speaker. So, for the kingdom of heaven, and he gave you the verb. What's the verb?
So, has drawn near.
Has drawn near. For the kingdom of heaven has drawn near. What if this Hey Basileia actually said Tain Basileian?
That's accusative singular.
That'd make it accusative, right? So it'd still be the kingdom of heaven. The translation would be the same, right? But where would it go in the sentence? What would it be instead of the subject?
Object.
Yeah, it'd be the object. So, if this sentence said everything the same except that was changed to Tain Basileion, it would say, he has drawn near to the kingdom of heaven. We'd supply ourselves. Because this is the object. So, the subject in that case would be what's called implied in the verb. If that were an accusative instead of a nominative, there'd be no subject here for us to go, oh yeah, there's the subject. We'd say, oh, it's implied in the verb. We supply it from the he has drawn near to the kingdom of heaven. Did that make sense? That will change. Okay. All right. Good practice. And it really just comes down to just keep doing it.
Yeah.
You just gotta immerse yourself and keep doing it over and over again. These will be on the website, so you can go through and check. You also, at the very end of each section, go to the last page in the exercise. He's got the answer keys down there at the bottom. Essentially, it's just verse references. So all of those verses, all those translations are from a verse in the Bible. So you can look up in your English translation and say, did we come across with the same basic idea?
Okay.
Meaning. All right, so new material. With our last 15 minutes. Prepositions in English. We get into prepositions in Greek. Thankfully, prepositions function in Greek almost exactly the way they do in English. So, first of all, prepositions in English. You know what they are?
At one point,
I did know. Prepositions are the placement relationship words. I think of them as the place words. In, with, on, under, by, next to. They tell you where something is in relation to something else. That's what a preposition is. That's how it functions. Examples. The book is under the table. The preposition is under. Her feet are on the chair. On is the preposition. John came with his disciples. With is the preposition. They're the relationship words or the placement words. And in English, the object of a preposition is always in the objective case. So every preposition has, it's got two nouns that it's connecting. One of them is the object, one of them is the subject. Her feet, the feet are the subject in that, and the chair is the object. It's telling you where her feet are in relation to the chair. John is the subject, and John came with his disciples. The object is his disciples. It's telling you where his disciples were in relation to John. You always use it in the object case, and the object case is most easily seen in pronouns in English. So the book is under him. You would not say the book is under he. He is the subjective case in English. We actually do have this in English, just not a whole lot of it. That would be improper. You wouldn't say that. Right? You'd say the book is under him, because him is the objective version of the word, of the pronoun he. You with me? That's right. All of those rules essentially apply the exact same way in Greek. They function the same way. They tell you a relationship between two nouns. And the meaning of a preposition changes slightly based on the case of its object. So prepositions can be used with either a genitive or a dative or an accusative. It can be with a genitive or in a dative or from a genitive or an accusative. So you put all these together and the meaning will change slightly. So when you're memorizing your vocabulary, you have to remember two, sometimes three different definitions based on what the noun it's being used with is. That sounds really confusing, and lots of people make it really confusing when they're first learning their vocabulary. It's really not that confusing, because if you think of the words, again, as conveying an idea, instead of conveying some English equivalent, that will balance a lot of this out. An example of this would be the Greek preposition ek. Okay. Ek means from or of, from, out of, away from, kind of. That's the idea that it conveys. We get, you might recognize the word ekklesia. Does that ring a bell? Ekklesia?
No, my mind immediately thought Gero Ecclesias.
Okay. Ekklesia is the Greek word for church. The simplest meaning is gathering. It's a gathering. Historically speaking, though, it comes from two different Greek root words. Ek and klesia. Kaleo is really the... It's to call out. Kaleo is to call out. And ek is from. And you kind of put it into a noun form. It's the called out ones. The ones who have been called out together. So they're gathering together. Often erroneously taught that that's what the church is supposed to be. We're supposed to be called out of culture. And they use this as a reason. Yes, the church is supposed to be called out of culture. But by the time they were using this word to mean the church, it just meant church. It meant gathering. Group of people. The same way that television, right? It doesn't mean far-seeing. Television, right, in English, is from two Greek words, or two root words. Tele means transportation, far, away, and vision means sight. But when you're talking about a television, it's this box that produces pictures. You're not saying that you're watching a far sight, right? Same way with ekklesia, it just means church, it means gathering. But the two root words, when viewed separately, mean from, out of, and called out, or called out ones, away from. All that to say, this is a preposition, and it can be used with a lot of different words. It's thrown onto the front of words a lot of the time. You'll see ek something. And so that clues you in. You recognize the preposition ek, and tells you something about what the way the verb is being or the noun is being used. If a genitive or dative is in the object of a preposition, those are big English. If a genitive or dative follows a preposition, the translation of the word of or in or with or to that, you know, we learn to throw onto the genitive, you throw on the word of to begin with. And with a dative, start with the word in. That'll drop in favor of whatever preposition is being used. So, for example, the preposition en most simply means in. It's the word in Greek. Easy one to remember. En, in. If that's being used with a dative, so let's go with give me the dative form of logos.
Singular or plural?
Singular.
Logo.
With any other subject. In logo means in the word, or in word. You supply the because you know it's there contextually. You would not say in the word. We know that the dative, we would normally throw the word in onto the dative, right, when we're translating it. But since we actually have the specific preposition in, we don't have to say in again.
So could you take away
it mean
the same thing?
Yeah. You would add it for more clarity. Because the dative might mean in, it might mean with, it might mean to, right? It might mean a lot of things, depending on the context. Whereas if you throw the preposition on there, it clarifies, okay, I'm talking about in this dative. Another example, apa, a Greek preposition for from or away from. So, ek just means out from, of. Apa means something very similar, but away from. So the example of without the preposition, the word of God, halagos tou theou, right? Nominative, genitive. The word of God, or God's word, right? If we put the preposition in there, apa clarifies, we want the from idea of the genitive. So, halagos apa theou, the word from God. Did I track?
Yeah.
We drop the article, because we know that the article's in there, and quite often you'll see the article gets dropped when you're using a preposition and a dative or a genitive. And that's how it translates, the word from God. Translation procedures. So when you come across a preposition and you're trying to translate it, first take note that it's a preposition. So you have to know your vocab. You have to know, okay, these words are prepositions, and when I see them, I need to be thinking about a preposition, how they function. First thing is find its object. Usually it'll be the next few words. That's the prepositional phrase. Have you recognized that term, a prepositional phrase?
Yeah.
It's a phrase that tells you a relationship thing. In the back of the car. That's a prepositional phrase. Identify what the preposition modifies. Usually a verb. Usually it's telling you something went, or something ran, or something did something in this way. Not always, though. Translate the phrase, and then work out where it goes. So translate the prepositional phrase as a unit, use that as a chunk, and then work out where it fits in the sentence based on the word that it modifies. This will be really intuitive as you start recognizing prepositions and seeing how they're used over and over again. You start saying, okay, kind of follows that construction, goes right there in the sentence. And then note, we already talked about that. Greek regularly drops the article from the preposition. The article will go away in favor of the preposition. That's a common thing that you'll see. Last little thing that you got to memorize this week is the verb to be. Eimi in Greek. It's got a funky little construction. I don't know why that is not bolded. Got a funky little construction that you don't learn about until the very end of Greek me verbs. But it's one that you just, in all languages, the to be verb gets used so often. This is that. I am, you are, he is. That's how we parse English, the English to be verb. Being is a strange concept in all languages. And so the to be verb is always a strange thing in languages, and it's just funky, and you just got to memorize it. And so this is the present tense to be verb. When we get into verbs, we'll see this form a lot. We'll see this first, second, third person, singular, and plural. First person is... No, don't be thinking Greek right now. Just be thinking, what is the first person?
From the view of the person.
Yeah.
Like, what you're reading.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's the I. And it's the I case in English. Second person is?
Like instructions.
Yeah, it's the you in English. It's the instructions, me to you. And then third person is? Exactly. You could call it description. It's outside of the two people talking. It's the he, she, it. Singular and plural are the same. So in English, we have this concept pretty clearly. It's nice. So verbs all have a person and a number. And in Greek, they have a lot of other things that we'll get to. But person and number is the first thing. So it can be first, second, or third person. In English, it's I am, you are, he is. And then when you go to the plural, we are, y'all are. In Texan, we actually have a separate word for the second person plural, which is y'all. Lots of other English speakers don't have that word, to their detriment.
They have French, too.
Yeah, exactly. You do this in French, right?
Yeah. It helps that to be looks like être, which is the French word to be.
Yes, and you'll see that, if you know Spanish, if you know French, Latin, they all have very similar looking to be verbs.
It's the biggest class.
And then third person plural is they are. So in Greek it's a me. Go ahead and say it.
A
me.
A.
A. Estin.
Estin.
Esmen.
Esmen.
Este.
Este.
And asin.
Asin.
Those are your to be verbs in Greek. And you just gotta memorize them. There's no trick. Just brute force bootstraps.
Okay.
And that's all the new material. Questions?
I think I got it.
All right.